Welcome to the latest episode of the Marubudiyum podcast. Today we are going to talk about the 2018 Malayalam film Ima Yao, which is a contraction for Iso, Mariam, and Yasepu, or it's basically Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. To talk about this movie, we have coming back to our show Pallavi. Hi Pallavi, welcome back.
Hi Kumar, hi everyone.
Yeah, so do you want to start off by telling us quickly how, what was the experience of watching Ima Yao?
Well, I watched, this is basically a dark comedy. So this is in the recent past, I've not watched any dark comedies, and it's definitely a genre of movies which I really enjoy watching. The movie is very interesting. I mean, I really enjoyed the film basically for how the director is sort of carried across one particular theme across the movie, and how he sort of brought these characters to life. And they're very relatable in a way, though it is talking about a serious topic, but and also a very morbid topic, but it is very relatable, and the acting and the direction is something little different and extraordinary. That's what I liked about the film, just to start off with.
So with Ima Yao, I did something that I usually don't, which is I read the brief description of the movie before I started watching it. And in the brief description, it was written that Ima Yao is a story of a son who wants to conduct his father's funeral in a grand manner because that was the father's last wish. So this was sort of intriguing because in many movies you see, you know, death happening as probably one incident or at a particular point in the movie. But to have a death as the entire backbone of the movie was very intriguing and very interesting. And for me, Ima Yao was a very different experience. For the first 20-25 minutes, I didn't feel anything I'll come back to this point later, except for, you know, trying to, the environment of the movie was set up. For instance, if you look at the first 25 minutes, you can almost feel the breeze of the coast when you watch the movie. The sound engineering was so good. And the people, the environment, the characters that were being set up, it sort of pulls you into the story, but you don't feel anything yet. But the moment the father, played by Kainakari Tankaraj, who is Vavachan Mestri in the movie, dies, then things take an entirely different turn. Then you sort of see black comedy, I guess, is what you call it. Till probably that it just keeps going on and on with each character's actions and whatever happens in the background, and how characters, you know, talk to each other, how they act with each other, the sequence of events. It's just one entire stretch of black comedy, which is very humorously written and amazingly performed. And the last 20 to 25 minutes is a lot of sadness because of how things turn out. So it was a very different experience for me. And I'm quite excited to talk about the movie.
Yeah, I agree on the sound design part. I think that was done brilliantly to sort of bring in the sort of the theme of the movie, even the visuals at the start. I think at every point, you've already introduced the sort of the focal point of the film, that is the death of the character. So I feel the death, the topic of death, is getting talked about through every medium in this film, through the background music, through, you know, subtle jokes in between, through even the the starting scene where the father is doing the procession, the march of the death, that procession, or I don't know the exact term for it. So all those things sort of bring that theme across very evidently, though you expecting that something around death is going to happen almost. And of course, you said that the introduction also, sort of the intro of the movie also talks about it, though I did not see the intro of the film. So, but I could sense by the in the starting itself that the movie is going to be somehow related to somebody dying or some death or something of that sort. So yeah, so I think the director's done a great job to sort of, even though the starting is slow, to engage the audience in the starting till the comedy starts. So I think that was done really well.
Okay, let's talk specific characters, and maybe we will start off with the father and the son. We have Vavachan Mestri and Ishii. Vavachan Mestri is the father and Ishii is the son. So I think Ishii works in a society where I think he's in charge of funds and accounts. And the initial conversation between the both of them is, I don't know if this is specific to a Kerala milieu. They both sit and drink and talk about, you know, how, I mean, is this a conversation that people would have in real life? I know that fact, I know that fiction a lot of time reflects facts, but so how, what did you think of it? Did you think that properly set up the movie when, you know, when Vavachan Mestri sits with his son and explains, you know, how he would like his funeral to be conducted? And I think there's a very specific references to a Latin Christian community in Kerala, so I don't know, some of those references might have gone over my head at least. But then there is a very detailed description of how he wants his funeral to be done, and the son also sort of, you know, agrees that, you know what, he doesn't have a lot of money, but he somehow, you know, promises to do it for his father. That seems sort of offbeat. I don't know how many people would actually play such a conversation in a movie. But it sort of sets up the entire thing. So I thought that was very new for me. So what did you think?
I think I don't think that kind of a conversation happens, but I mean, I think it's okay. I mean, I've heard, at least in movies, at least, that people talking about how they want to be buried or they want to be. So maybe subtle conversations like that, but not an elaborate conversation like this, that this is what I want. I want a silver cross or a gold cross. I want a I want a band, I want fireworks. So basically he wants his death to be celebrated in a way. That is what I understood from all that discussion. And he's also talking about him being an artist. He does this dance for his son when he's drunk. So I think he has that artistic flair. He's a little dramatic by nature. So maybe he wants his death to be dramatic. That's what I perceived. Also, there is also the dichotomy of him not being too religious. He talks, his son tells him that you don't come to church. The you know he talks about people are discussing that you don't come to church, but then he's very he also has built the altar for the church. He's the Mestri, so he's built the altar for the church. So he's sort of not very religious, but he wants his funeral to be very done really well. And so it's sort of a dichotomy of the character also. So maybe it's a reflection more of his personality than actually how these conversations might not generally happen.
Yeah, interesting fact. I sort of missed that thing about Vavachan Mestri not being very religious and not going to church. I think that's a great point. But when it comes to Ishii, right, I think something that was really a piece of good writing is that the moment Vavachan Mestri is dead, okay, Ishii's character sort of transforms. A guy who looks like extremely self-assured before, you know, his father dies. You know, if you see his journey while he's coming from the office and to the home, he looks to have a control over everything. You know, he's sort of a dominant guy. He has a fight with somebody, and then he comes home and tells his sister and his wife and his mother as to what to do and what not to do. The moment Vavachan Mestri is dead, Ishii is at a loss of, how do I say, he's at a loss of words. He doesn't know what to do next. It's his close friend Ayyappan, who is also the local ward councillor, who comes in and takes charge. I thought that was something, that is something that, you know, that will actually happen in real life. You know, somebody who's very closely related to a certain death might not be in the best frame of mind to handle everything. And I think pretty much in these scenarios, this is what happens. And I really, really love the character of Ayyappan, which is played by Vinayakan. Who takes charge of the entire proceedings? I think despite having an argument with Ishii earlier in the day, I don't maybe recollect properly. I think it was somebody else, but Vinayakan like just takes complete charge of the proceedings, And I don't know if this is the thing with Kerala, I think, but I think it's a great lesson for people to see. You know, Vinayagan is a Hindu and Ishi is a Christian. And looking at the level of polarization we have today, I think it's great that this level of, you know, trust is being shown between two different people. I think that is really appreciable. And Vinayagan really portrays the role very well. There is a lot of, I mean, so how he takes charge of things is one thing. But towards the end of the movie, when he asks the inspector to, you know, come and solve the crisis that is currently happening in the household, and the inspector sort of makes him gives a speech and, you know, just keeps dragging him, there is this point where he just completely resigns himself to the fact that, you know, nobody is going to help him, and he just walks out of the station drenched in the rain, you know. And the inspector really gets a, you know, he sort of gets shocked at this, and then he comes to solve that crisis, where even Vinayakan says, you know what, we come to you for whenever you need help, we guys come, but, you know, when we need your help, you guys never turn up. And I thought that was a very poignant moment in that movie. But yeah, I really loved how Aiyappan took charge. And there are also so many, you know, very very funny points involving Aiyappan, especially with that point where, you know, the electricity goes out and they call the
Yes.
electricity board guy,
Yeah.
and then. And this guy apparently over the phone, I think he was either drunk or asleep, you know, he had told Aiyappan to go and die himself. So he gives him a good thrashing, but then, you know, that was a really funny moment where he says, the electricity guy complains that you know what, you told me that nobody would hit me. And then Aiyappan says, you know what, I told nobody would hit you. I didn't say that I will not hit you, so just get the hell out of here. I thought
Yeah.
that
He has a very terrible temper, but he's the best friend everybody wants, so that he's around when you really need him. When all the other characters are there, including the family, they're there, but they're not as useful. While this is the guy who takes charge when his friend is sort of, is grieving. So that's the sad part, is that he's the only son. Like you said, there. I mean, he's the one who sort of switches in his character as soon as the death happens. That very much shows that he was the closest to his father, because the others, though, show outwardly displays of grief, but he's the one who's silent and is sort of suffering in silence, and he's not even able to mourn his father's death because he has to take charge. And he's the only one who can do it, because he's the only male member in the family. So yeah, so he's sort of his friend comes and sort of helps him when he's sort of in his worst state. So it's a great example. It's probably I mean, one of the best displays of friendship I've seen in movies, where in such a crisis situation, somebody who is not even part of the family or does not even belong to the same religion is sort of taking charge of the situation, helping out. It's a great story arc.
Also, there's this point, right, where Ishii is trying to purchase this really expensive coffin,
Yes.
and Aiyappan is like dead against it because he knows clearly that this coffin seller is trying to manipulate his feelings and sell a coffin that is, you know, not at all worth for like a humongous amount. I didn't even know that a coffin would cost something like a 30 35 I mean, he initially pegs it at like 55,000 or something. But the
Yeah.
entire conversation was really hilarious. I was actually laughing. You know, in black comedy usually don't laugh, I think, but I was
Yeah.
actually laughing because, you know, they were arguing over the discount, and this guy is like, you know, 10%, and then he's like, no, but where is the 10%? And then he gives this crazy calculation that goes on, and Ishii's clearly not in his right mind because he goes on to, because he knows he already doesn't have enough money. I mean,
Yes.
despite the fact that he has obviously promised his dad that he's going to give him a grandchildren, the practical reality is that he's broke. He has to sell his wife's gold chain, the only piece of gold ornament that she still owns, to conduct his funeral.
Yes.
And despite that, he just purchases this coffin, which eventually turns out to be actually a smaller one. And even during the towards the end, you know, they're not able to fit the body properly into the coffin, and there is an argument about that also among the people. They said that, you know, this guy's bought like a bad coffin, or, you know, so and so has, I don't remember the coffin seller's name. I mean, you know, he has cheated Ishii. It's actually very rooted in reality, you know. Even though, you know, a place of death is very somber and all that, you'll see that, you know, people are really snarky. They're passing, they don't even, there are some people who actually, you know, I mean, you can see people's character during death, I guess. there are people who sort of overcome their enmity or you know whatever sore feeling, but there are people who still retain that, and then you know even use this occasion to hurt.
So you like you said, the situation of the death sort of brings out the true nature of many people. For example, you mentioned the daughter-in-law's gold chain getting pawned off. So she is more worried about her being judged by the community because she will be in the first rung of mourners and everybody will look at her not wearing a chain. So that is her larger concern, that how would people perceive me, how would my family perceive me if I'm seen without a gold chain in my neck. So she borrows it from a friend. The grief part is not consuming her, but the first thought she gets is that I have to mourn and I'll be in center stage. Also, there's an interesting scene where the father hits this person in the starting of the movie because he says that his daughter is pregnant. So he just randomly slaps this person and he leaves. And that person comes and he sort of, he's like telling everybody, today he slapped me and now he's dead. I did not mean this to happen. And then later on, he sort of volunteers to wash his dead body. So that is sort of a shocking thing for me. Why would he volunteer to do that? So it's just that he might be a loud mouth, but he's not a bad person. So, I mean, there's some very interesting character nuances in this film. You just don't expect people to do some things and they do it. And even the mother, his wife, the dead person's wife, she sort of is crying on cue almost. And is sort of constantly having...
Her name is Penama.
I don't remember the name. I'm just saying. I mean, you can add that. I don't remember names. Yeah, so his wife Penama sort of cries on cue. She just is waiting for an audience almost to start crying. So much so that there is the father who comes in the morning and she's sleeping on the side. And as soon as he comes in, she starts wailing again. It's like on cue, like as soon as she's awake, she doesn't think anything and she starts crying. And she's constantly having this commentary, which is hilarious. It's sad that she's wailing like that, but it's hilarious that she's talking like that. So it's his the director's view on some of these characters are very interesting, and they do things which you don't expect. So that I found amusing.
I would rather say that the mother, this Penama, actually does things what you know a typical mother-in-law you can actually expect, especially you know whenever the when her daughter-in-law's parents arrive. She cries that, you know, these guys never came when you were alive, but they have come now, but you're not able to see them. And then she goes on to talk about, you know, the fact that they did not give any dowry, but the fact that, you know, Vavachan was okay with that. And, you know, he told them, give whatever you can. I mean, there is no reason to put that in a grieving.
Exactly. So she found a stage. That's what I understood from that. That is the point where nobody will question her for talking like that. So she found a stage to just say whatever she wants, and she just used it very well.
And I found this like horribly realistic. I've not really been to too many death places, but I found people that, you know, they just use any chance to, you know, probably, I don't know if this is a grievance, but I don't know. This is like a very clever way to put across your, I don't know, your snarky comments or whatever.
Yeah.
That was really funny. That was really funny. My mom, you know, she grew up in a village, so she has told me tales of how people actually do this.
Okay.
During, you know, during funerals and all that. And there is this, probably it's a bit of a side note. So there is this story that she's told me that, so this is dead house and this is, you know, sister-in-law or somebody who's come to cry. And then she notices that there is this bunch of, I think, a bitter gourd that is grown and is ready to be plucked. So in the course of crying, you know, she says that, you know, she wants it in the middle of her wailing. But then the daughter-in-law, who is part of the house, in the return crying, you know, she grieves for whoever is dead and then adds a comment saying that it has been already promised to somebody else.
Okay.
So these things are very common, I think, in death houses. And also, I think this story is set in a coastal village, Yernakulam. So Yeah, I mean, it was a very nice characteristic to be shown off.
Yes.
And all the smaller characters also had a nice arc, right? The one thing I wanted to talk about was this Agnes or Nise,
Yeah.
who is the sister of Ishii. So there are some character arcs which are very neatly written. It actually doesn't, or I don't know if it's a character arc, it's a sort of a plot which involves Nise. It doesn't come to a logical conclusion. I actually thought it would, but the fact that they did not conclude it was very nice. I want to talk about that for 2 minutes. So Nise is in a relationship with a guy called Sivanappan, about whom, and this is the, and th this is the sort of controversy over which Vachan slaps this guy in the beginning of the movie, because there is somebody who accuses this guy's daughter of being in a relationship and that she's already pregnant or whatever, which is not true. But then the Sivanappan comes to meet Nise during the death. And even in this situation of sadness, I think he sort of tries to grope her, and she gets like absolutely disgusted, and she shoos him away, and but he's still hanging around. As an in an alternate scenario, or rather, there is another guy, the guy who plays the clarinet. So he has asked for Nise's hand in the past and has been refused, and they call him to play the clarinet for the death, and he's initially hesitant because of the rejection. But finally he comes through and then he plays, and then she's sort of impressed with him. I mean, but the director just leaves it hanging. We don't know if they get together later or not. I thought maybe towards the end of the movie, while I was watching the movie, I thought, I did not expect the kind of ending that it had later, to be fairly honest. I thought it, they would have a lot of they would have a resolution and wrap sort of this happy ending. But I thought this was, again, like you told earlier, right? It is during death that you really see what is people's character. And this guy comes across while the boyfriend whom she has chosen decides to act like a creep. So that was a really good plot involving, I think, Agnes, Elise, Nise, and I just really wanted to put it out there.
Yeah, I was also very surprised by that scene that anybody would try such a stunt during such a time of grief. And any woman would be put off. Any human would be put off with such a behavior, obviously, at such a point of time. So, I mean, yeah, so, but yeah, there was no logical conclusion to that story. But we can sort of, as many directors do now, that we sort of left to imagine what would have happened to that, those set of characters.
So, was there any other character that you really liked a lot? I mean, do you want to talk about Father Zakaria?
Yeah, father and two other characters. So starting off with the father, he's a very, I think more than the father, he's more of a detective. He's he's constantly looking for clues or scandal or controversy, and he's ready to listen to Lazar, right? So the character who is constantly gossiping, he's coming up with his theories, and the other person is trying to, shut him off, but he's like, father's like, let him speak. So he's more interested in figuring out what the story is, what, despite the family saying this was a straightforward death, but he's looking for scandal in it. And also at the starting of it, you're sort of made to, at points of time, you're wondering if it's true. But then later on, you sort of believe this is just normal death, and he probably had a heart attack. And later it was also mentioned that he had a cardiac problem and he did not resolve it. So yeah, this father sort of is in a way a gray character, because he is not delivering his duty of being a father and sort of making this person's I mean, funeral take place. So he's just refuses to go ahead with this and says that this has to be first scrutinized by the police. And the police is indifferent to the situation. So it sort of worsens the situation. And finally, EC gets so angry that he hits the father. And then he just point blank refuses to go ahead and do the funeral. So it's a very, though his character is very interesting that he's trying to be a detective, but it's sort of also a negative character in a way. So that is very, you really get frustrated with the father at one point of time.
Yeah, he's quite a petty character, right? And that sort of is a, I don't know, how do you say it? It's the total opposite of what you would expect a priest to be. And that's why I really like this writing, is that it's very rooted in reality, that everyone people are not what we might expect them to be, and we have to sort of resign ourselves to that reality. You see a priest, I mean, you see the depiction of a priest in so many movies, you know, they're very kind, they're very soft-spoken, and they're very forgiving and all that. But here, it's like the total opposite. This guy is very petty, he's vengeful. And then, in fact, there is somebody who remarks that, you know, the sub-inspector and the priest should exchange roles.
Yes.
Because this guy is constantly, ever since he hears this rumor from Lasser, and I'll come to Lasser later. Ever since he hears this rumor from Lasser, he's just hell-bent on sort of trying to prove that this is not a natural death. And, you know, somebody might have actually killed Vauchan Mistry. But very good acting by Dilish Potan, who is also the director of movies like Mahesh and the Pratikaram. I think it was very well done. And coming to Lasser, I think the rumors he created and the comments he passes in general were really too funny. Especially when he goes to this doctor's house and, you know, the doctor's wife tells the doctor himself is drunk and they should get the nurse to inspect the body. So the moment they leave the house, this Lazar remarks that this doctor and the nurse have a thing going on.
There's very apparent slut-shaming of the nurse in the film. And I think that also stems from the fact that she's a real tough nut. And she doesn't give a damn about anybody. So she comes in, Lasser's character is brilliant and he sort of, you know, creates all these rumors and sort of is the grapevine of the village kind of. And he's sort of, you know, spreading these rumors without any basis. I mean, there is nothing which sort of gives him evidence or anything. He just comes up with these things and he sprouts it out. And one of those things is about the nurse. And this nurse is sort of so badass that she comes to their house and she first of all is very annoyed to be woken up, I think, at so late an hour. And she comes and she's not interested to do her duty. She's checking and she's saying that, no, I can't do this. She's not even tying his jaw properly, which somebody has to tell her to do. And she just refuses to cooperate. I think that is the main thing of this movie, is that everybody is sort of refusing to do what they're supposed to do. The priest is refusing what he's supposed to do. The nurse is refusing. So it's just like, you know, these people are constantly getting encountered with these characters who just are not letting this person rest in peace. So that is
an excellent point. I'd never thought of it that way, actually. Nobody is doing what they're supposed to do, right? Even the guy who digs the grave, you know, he gets drunk and he dies in his own grave.
That is the worst thing I felt was, I think the director was trying to say something over there that a man digs his own grave. There's a saying like that, he literally did that.
Yeah, that's the thought I also got. I mean, I knew that he was, I actually first thought he passed out. But then he dies and you know, later is the dog who keeps accompanying him everywhere. The dog also dies.
So basically, there are four deaths in this film. One is a duck which gets killed for dinner and which keeps getting referenced throughout the film. The duck is very inconsequential, honestly, it's just dinner. But somehow it keeps coming up. The duck is there. That's one death. Then the two humans who die and then the dog. So I think those are basically, it's like, that's what I'm saying. From the start, death is a very constant, people are talking of presence. Even when Albie, who's the clarinet player, in the starting, his clarinet is broken and he's playing it and somebody's like, stop playing this. It sounds like somebody's playing for death. So it's always that death is being spoken about in conversation casually. So, and finally, sort of prophetic, like people die after that. So, yeah.
Coming back to the nurse, yeah, I think you were on point when you said that she's a badass. And like I said, right, you see, even for a small character as the nurse and her husband, they've written that dynamic very well. So she's sort of a little masculine, I guess.
Yes.
And, you know, because she rides the bike herself. And her husband is shown to be a little, I don't know what word.
Timid, I would say.
Timid. Timid is the right word. Like, you know, he tells her, why don't you go? You know, they're asking you. It's almost like a reversal of what you would consider as a classic role in a relationship. But, and then she's a no-nonsense woman also. She, you know, this guy Lasser, after, you know, like you said, slut-shaming her or, you know, spreading rumors about her, is quite del is very delighted with the idea that, you know, he's going to ride the bike with her sitting at the back. But then she just tells him to like get lost. She's like, get off the bike, I will go. She takes her husband and goes. I thought that was really nice touch. It's sort of a slap in the face for Lasser, I guess. You know, not directly though. You know, she doesn't know what he's talking about her behind her back.
Right.
But it's a sort of a slap in the face indirectly where he doesn't get his way. I just thought that was really funny. The way she comes and then, you know, and she also does this in mini interrogation where she asks whether Vavachan had, you know, that saraayam or brandy or whatever. And then she says, no, he smells like brandy.
Yeah, she
Yeah,
knows
and I think
her
she
alcohols,
knows
it
her
seems.
alcohol. I mean, she's also a nurse, right? I'm pretty sure she must have investigated. I mean,
Of
she must
course.
have seen cases who died of all
Of
that. So,
course.
yeah, very, very nice nuance. So, this entire part was really hilarious, like all the characters we covered, right? But
Yes.
there is this last twist that comes that was really shocking. I never expected it. Even though it was just referenced earlier, where Ayyappan asks whether, you know, you want to call the people from that Patani island. And this fellow says, no, that'll create a big ruckus. I just never paid any attention to it. But the fact that, you know, this Vavachan has a second family was quite shocking.
Yeah, so there's always this suspense about where he's going. So there's large periods of disappearances which gets talked about. There's this family which gets talked about. So there's an understanding that there is somebody in his life other than these people, whom he's going to, obviously. So, but then there's no talk about his second wife. So I guess these people do not accept them as family, obviously. So they don't refer to them as family. So yeah, they just refer to them as the people who live on that island. But yeah, their existence is known to these people. That's all.
Yeah. So, and I thought it was a very cruel twist to things, and I'm pretty sure this has happened in real life, which is something that Dieter Jozef referenced. But after that, things really take an ugly turn, right? With the two families arguing over the corpse, and you know, the father refusing, and the police have literally they don't have the police have given a go ahead, but then where do you bury the grave that was dug? It has been occupied by the grave digger himself. And I thought it was a very sad ending, but I thought it was the right ending. You know, logically, if you look at it, you know, this guy's already broke and he's
Yeah.
made a series of bad decisions. And ideally, maybe he could have reconciled with that family at least to get the funeral through.
Yes.
But that's a logical course of things, right? But he's not in his right mind. And the fact that this father is buried in their own garden, I guess, so very, very anticlimactic ending to what at least I expected. And I actually didn't understand the ending. I had to go online and read it to understand, you know, the fact that those two guys who are playing the cards are angels, and you
Yes.
know, eventually I sort of got it when those boats with the lights come and these three are standing, the grave digger Vavachan and the dog. I sort of got it, but I didn't get the fact that these two are angels. It was a very somber ending to after that hilarious stretch of black comedy, and I was a little thrown. So that was my reaction to the ending. I was like, oh, okay. I was a little sad towards the end of it.
Yeah, it definitely makes you sad, but I think it, like you said, it is the only logical ending because anybody in his position at this point of time when nothing is going his way, his father has asked him to do one thing, and it is very established as a fact that he is very fond of his father. Right from the fact he sits with him and asks him what he wants, and he's sitting with him and wiping his face, and his father is not in his right mind, and he sort of, you know, wet himself and he takes him inside. So you can see that he really cares for his father. His father is constantly out of the house, but when he comes, he really worries about him, and he's the one who's really bothered about this character. While you see his wife and daughter-in-law are sort of scheming against him in a way to keep him in the house. So they're not always looking after his interests. This guy is purely interested in his well-being. And after his death, the only thing he wanted was a good funeral for his father, which he was not able to achieve, and despite his best efforts. So that sort of pushes him over the, you know, edge, and sort of he loses his mind suddenly in his fit of rage, behaves in an uncharacteristic manner, and sort of scares everybody. But yeah, in a way, it shows that how much his father meant to him. So, yeah, I think you couldn't have ended it in a better way. He just establishes his love for his father in a greater way.
So, net-net, what are your views about the movie?
I have not seen anything like this. It's a very refreshing movie. I mean, I didn't go with... Again, I did not read the description. I'm making a point to not read descriptions nowadays so that I have full suspense about movies. I was very pleasantly surprised by many things. It was very technically well made. It is actually visually very good. It's a simple setup. There's not much set design or anything here, but it's just a very small house and all those things. But the external visuals are great. The sound design, like you mentioned, is brilliant. Direction, the writing of the characters is brilliant. The dialogue, though I don't understand Malayalam, whatever I understood from the subtitles was brilliantly written. All the humor is, is quite extraordinary. And subtle at sometimes. I think it is definitely a must watch for anybody who appreciates good cinema.
I think you've pretty much covered it, especially when you said that I've never seen anything like it. I have not either. So this is a must watch for anyone who loves Indian cinema. I think, I don't think, I have no other words. I think you've summed it up very well. So yes, so to our listeners who are who have tuned in, if you watched Ima Yov already, please go and watch it again and spread the word. To people who haven't watched it, please go ahead and watch it and still spread the word. So that's about it from us on this episode of Marbadium. It was really good fun bringing Ima Yov to you. So until we get back to you with a new episode, please like our channel, share, subscribe to it for regular notifications on new podcast. Share with all of your friends and keep listening. Have a great day. Bye.